Good afternoon, and welcome to Juno Afternoon. Today's show is a collaboration between KTOO and the Black Awareness Association of Juno. I'm your host, Christina Michelle, and today we are continuing a conversation that we had last week as a tribute to our veterans. Our panelists are Malik Favors of the Air Force, Ben Jack of the U.S. Army, and Latarsha McQueen of the Coast Guard. Thank you so much for joining us. Miss Latarsha, what was your experience being a woman in the Coast Guard? Well, and I know that you had a positive experience overall. Was there anything, any experiences you had that weren't good that you feel were attributed to you being female?
Interesting. Definitely more negative in the beginning. And I think a part of that is just sort of figuring people out. Mm-hmm. And understanding how to respond to people and to people's words and their actions. I was the Black girl reporting to Station Tybee. There was one other African American there. He was an older gentleman. Everyone else was white. And I just remember being, and I'm not going to say I was harassed, but I was constantly, people, well, why is your hair like that? When I would have braids in, well, you're not allowed to have braids in your hair. I'm like, no, yeah, I am. I read the manual because that's what you keep telling me about, mm-hmm. And like things like that. Your hair can't be like this. And when it actually could, I remember it was just really hard to get qualifications. And I don't know if the only reason I feel like my race had anything to do with it is because there were other people there that I didn't, it just wasn't as hard. And when I say hard, I don't mean I just didn't understand. It wasn't as hard for them to get people to help them. And in order to succeed, I remember sitting down at this unit and there was, we were a port and starboard, which means half of the unit works on, 2 days and then the other half works on the other two. And so, we're sitting down and everybody on the port team was sitting in the room, sort of having a conversation. It was a Saturday. I think there may have been a football game on. And I don't remember. I have no idea how this conversation got started, but it basically ended up we were talking about why there weren't more Black people in the Coast Guard. And of the probably 7 to 8 people in that room, me not being included, of course, all of the other folks basically said that there aren't more Black people in the Coast Guard because we're not smart enough. And we just can't get in the Coast Guard. They said that, all of the Black people go to the Army, it just didn't make any sense. And I sort of repeated, I said, I don't understand. Like, do you hear the words that are coming out of your mouth? Do you recognize how racist you're being? Mm. And can I point out that I'm the only person in this room with a 4-year degree? And you don't see the irony of any of this. Those attitudes were the same attitudes that made it difficult for me to get help. This is the location where I think I applied to OCS for the first time, or I tried to. I got to the unit, I started a newsletter, I did my job, I painted and I cut grass like everybody else and worked on my qualifications. I wrote an article for the newspaper.
Nice.
And then when I was up on the posters, like in Georgia and South Carolina, because I was working with recruiters. And so at all these things that I was doing, and I applied for OCS, and my officer in charge said that he could not endorse me because he didn't know me well enough. And I said, I don't really understand what that means. What does that mean? You don't know me well enough. Do you not know my name? What is it? I've been here for, almost 6 months, probably at the time, 7 months or so. What exactly is it that you need to know about me? Can we have a conversation so that I can tell you what you need to know? And he never gave another explanation. He was like, yeah, sorry, I just don't know you, so I can't endorse you. And I said, okay. And then, you know, after that, they had this thing that's called a command, sort of an open door thing where senior enlisted personnel come from the higher or parent unit. And so they came, and I knocked on the door, and I said, you know, normally I would not do this. And I actually don't even know what's going on. But here's a conversation that I've had. And he knew who I was because of some of the things that I'd done. And I said, you know, I just don't understand. If there's a problem with my performance, then great. Tell me what it is and I'll fix it. But when you just say you don't know me and you haven't made an effort to know me, but the people I work for know me, and is it not your job to recognize that they are, you know, signing off on me doing this, but you can just say you don't know me and then we can be done. And so I had that conversation, and probably 5 minutes after I walked out of the office, the officer in charge called me into his office and said, oh, well, I signed your paperwork for OCS. And I was like, so do you know me now, I guess? So it's just weird stuff like that. Like, and was it racism? I don't know. Was it sexism? I don't know. Just somehow he didn't know me as well as he knew all of the other people. And did I not make a hard enough effort to get to know him? I don't know. Again, I tried to do things and tried to help the unit in any way that I could. One of the other things that I can say is definitely as a woman, there was discrimination. And I look back at the Coast Guard I went into and that I joined, and I looked at the Coast Guard now, and it's not 100% perfect, but they're making so many strides to make things better. I can tell you that I've been discriminated against because I was pregnant. I've been discriminated against because I had kids, and you know, all of these things. I got low marks on my my officer reviews because I was tired when I was pregnant, and you just things like that. So that was sort of the Coast Guard I grew up in, but it's getting a lot better. The Coast Guard, the people that I've worked with probably the last half of my career, I cannot speak more highly of them. I wish I had met them and known the things that I knew sooner on in the Coast Guard. And what you mentioned about having a mentor is so very important. Because if you don't have someone telling you what's important, you can try and figure it all out on your own, but you really do miss out. You miss out on opportunities. You miss out on really understanding your value to the organization and how you can help the organization be as successful as possible. So, yeah, there was discrimination in the beginning, and I think, again, like I said, the last half of my career was 180 degrees different in the people that I interacted with, people that I work with, the people that I work for. And it says a lot about, I think, what we are trying to do and how we're trying to move forward and how we are at least trying to be honest and real and recognizing that discrimination does exist. It exists against Black people. I have worked with people who say that we're just too sensitive and we're making it up. And but we've just made really great strides, not only in policy, but holding people accountable as well. So that's my experience.
If I might piggyback on what LaBarge was saying.
No, of course.
You realize that I'm just a tad bit older than your other two military guests. I was in the military in the 70s, and things were quite different back then. As a matter of fact, when I got to Alaska, one of the things that I was asked to do by my my CEO was to serve as their affirmative action representative. I thought that would be ironic.
That's interesting.
But that's what I did. And I lived in the barracks when I first got there. And most of the guys who were in the barracks, especially the African-Americans, the blacks, they were guys who had come back from Vietnam, and their experiences were quite different from mine. And I had some trouble identifying and working with them under this affirmative action and program and the things that I was mandated to do. But once again, it was a different time. And sometimes, even though it was a different time, some things never improved. And I see some things now improving. But at the same time, if you will, I'm seeing things happening now, even now, today, that was happening back in the 60s. So it's something that we have to overcome and continue to be vigilant and aggressive with. The military now, I have a young friend who just joined the military. He loves it. And he hasn't shared with me any kind of problem that he's having being in the military right now.
That's good. That's good. Well, thank you so much. I'm going to just pause right here so we can go to a quick break. I have a couple more questions to ask. So we'll be right back after this short break. Good afternoon, Juno. Welcome back to our show today, Juno Afternoon, which is a collaboration between KTOO and the Black Awareness Association of Juno. I'm your host, Christina Michelle, and I'm joined here by a panel of veterans. We're having a conversation about each one of their experiences in the service. And before we went to break, we were talking in particular about the experiences that they had being in the service and being African American. A question that I would like to ask is about around what you have shared thus far, each of you, in terms of any discrimination or challenges that you had that you believe were due to your color. Did those experiences motivate you to want to keep moving forward and to stay in the service regardless of the experience you had? Or would you say that you were discouraged by those experiences?
If it's okay, I would like to answer that. Okay. Just for myself. It's always discouraging when you see that people are racist. But one of the things that I think it showed was that really what you have in the military is sort of a subset of what you have in society. And one of the things, like I said, I didn't have mentors the first portion of my career in the Coast Guard. And so whenever I would experience these things, one of the things that I would do is that I would make a point to like seek out other people like me or like the younger me, just to be there and try and help to guide them in their career, really. And because you have to do a couple of things. You got to either look beyond it because, you know, people are doing things that are not overt, you know, they're doing it in a way that this could be because of this, but what can I do about it? Mm-hmm. You got to know what you can do about it. And so really understanding what the process is, the civil rights process is. But then also, I think just being there and making yourself available to other people who may not have someone who is there to listen to them, who is there to actually want to hear what they have to say and understand what they have to say, and help them move forward. So I think it was encouraging for me just knowing that, okay, I'm out of this one now, so I can help somebody else the next time.
What a great perspective.
Yeah. You know, and from my experience, what it taught me, it was I needed to propel mentorship, not so much for my own race, but for other races. Later on, I was a senior NCO. I had maybe 75 people underneath me. And you better believe that they were diverse as the rainbow. There were people from all over the country, and they looked all different. But, you know, some of them didn't have the experience to know what was not okay to say. They didn't know that it was, you know, they may have come from somewhere that it was fine to say certain words that were not acceptable. Mm. So to take them sort of under your wing, too, you have to educate everyone, and you share all experiences. But, you know, towards the latter parts of my career, one thing that really challenged me was that I had a young person that was LGBTQ. So I have to also learn myself about what's okay and how to treat that and how to recognize that. And that person has just as much rights and for the opportunities as everyone else. I obviously don't have a problem with it, but there are other people around you that do. So you have to also help that person. There were challenges with that, but I learned and helped that person as well. So I can tell that it's going to take work, you know, and I knew that I couldn't just leave and just throw my hands up and just say, well, you know, I'm uncomfortable. I don't want to be in this situation. I'm just going to leave. You just don't want to give up. Because even to this day, you know, this is fast forward 25, 30 years ago or later. I walk into my current position. I go to a different business in Iowa. And there's a gentleman that I'm supposed to meet. But when I met him, I was there for 2 days. And I'm supposed to have meetings with him. And he said no more than 3 words to me. And I was supposed to get with him and share what he was supposed to send to our company every month. And he truthfully did not want to speak to me. I mean, just did not. So I just, you know, through my experiences, sometimes through charisma, I just figure out that, you know, there's other ways around that. You can't just quit and go back home. I mean, you still got to, you know, figure out the best way forward. And you figure it out. You know, you got to use your intellect. So that's my two cents on that.
Good. Thank you, Malik.
My time?
Yes, if you have anything to add, please do.
Yes, I do have something to add to that. Earlier, I mentioned that I was in a different era, different time than the other two guests. And just wanted to say that being a product of the civil rights era, having gone through that growing up where I had to walk on one side of the street, if a white person was on that side, I had to cross the street so I wouldn't go past them, couldn't look at them in the eye. There were signs all around, you know, for whites only. For blacks only. I experienced all of that. And getting into the military, for me, it was exciting because I thought that I would be seeing something a lot better than what I experienced in Louisiana. And for the most part, it was while I was in the military, but still, it was there. And during that time, the 70s, as a matter of fact, I got out of the military in 76, as I stated earlier. There were still issues that we had to deal with. for me, it made me stronger. I was determined to improve myself despite what some people saw as odds against me. And I think I did very well with my life. Going through the military, as I stated earlier, getting rank as fast as I did. And I was lucky. I'll have to say that I was very fortunate with some of the people that I served with who were willing to work with me and help me when there were others who were on the other side of that and very overt about their feelings towards me. But I think it made me a better person as I came through. And one thing I have to say is with my father, he taught me a lot about being in that kind of situation. He just told me to stand tall, you know, and I was always an outspoken person. So I think that helped a lot as well.
Can I say one more thing, just because a lot of times we want to make judgments on people because of the decisions that they make in response to their things that they experience. I have known also many people who have experienced discrimination because of their race or their gender, who have chosen not to remain in the Coast Guard. But I just want to say that those people are not making any less brave choices because they chose to do something different. They went on to be successful in different ways and I think lead in different ways. So I think this is just a good opportunity to, like, for people who are listening to not just look at the three or listen to the three people that you're listening to and say, here's what they did. It's really similar. If you didn't do that thing, then, you know, why did you leave? And you shouldn't have done that. People make different decisions based on where they are in their life and what's best for them. And it doesn't make it wrong. I just want to point that out.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. I left out of the military with the idea I was going to make it a career. But during that time, the Trans-Alaska pipeline was kicking up. And people were coming and golfing where I was working at the military base on the golf course. And one guy showed me a check that he got, or his check stub, for 1 week of work, and it bugged my eyes. And I decided that I would go to the CO and say, is it possible to get an early out? And I was fortunate that he liked me. The CO liked me. He asked me why. I told him why. I said, this pipeline's taken up. I want to be a part of that. And he gave me an early out. And the rest is history.
So we'll just pause for just a moment and go to a quick break, and we'll be right back. Good afternoon, and welcome back to today's show, which is a collaboration between KTOO and the Black Awareness Association of Juneau. Today, we have a panel of veterans who are joining us via Zoom. We have Ms. Latarsha McQueen of the United States Coast Guard, Mr. Ben Jack from the United States Army, and Mr. Malik Favors of the United States Air Force. I was reading an article, actually it was unrelated, but I happened to have been reading it while I was preparing for our interview today. And the man, it was actually about flying first class. And he said that he flies first class all the time. He's, you know, that's normal for him. Every flight he takes first class. But he happened to mention that the only time that he will not fly first class is if he sees someone on the flight who's a veteran, or if they're serving and they're in their uniform, or if they wear a hat that says, you know, veteran or anything like that, he always gives them his seat. And so I was wondering, what's the nicest thing anyone has ever done, a civilian, to show their appreciation for your service?
I have gone to merchandisers who were really nice and have given me good breaks on prices, but I suppose that would be a thing that that's normal now with ex-military or military people. Once again, I came up in a different time, the Vietnam era, and the country was in turmoil. As a matter of fact, with us, we were told to not travel in uniform.
Okay.
And for me, that was demonstrated when I got off a plane in San Francisco, and I was in uniform. I was in my Class A uniform, and it was terrible. Very, 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 it was a terrible experience. I was booed. I was called a baby killer. Ooh. And I had not even gone to Vietnam. But I was called all kinds of names. So for me, not having that kind of behavior towards me was nice. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that's kind of setting the bar a little low for us. But...
different time, different era.
You know, being around a lot of military installations, it seems to be sort of the norm. It's kind of expected. There's a lot of military around. You'll find that sometimes there's not as many restaurants that offer military discounts because there's so many. But what I tend to do is try to move away from, towards the latter part of my military career, I lived maybe 30 to 45 minutes from the base, just because I wanted a bit kind of like wanted to exhale away from the base, didn't have to be so uptight, you know, and not be there. But I didn't also notice that if I was in uniform, I got a bit more special treatment. You know, so sometimes it may have made me a bit uncomfortable because, like I said, I was moving out there because I wanted to sort of be separate from the base for a while, since I worked all day, all night sometimes at the base. But here in Florida, if you're a veteran, you get to put a V on your driver's license. So it's a bit toned down now where if I go into a restaurant or something and they want to see my ID and they see it and then they see the V, they recognize that. And it's a sense of pride. They recognize that, you know, you were a veteran. They don't ask what branch was it in. You just say, well, thank you for your service. I don't get as many kudos as when I was in the military in uniform, active duty, as I did back then. But that's sort of nice, you know. And it's in between Veterans Day. It's just any day of the week.
Yeah, thank you.
And I want to say ditto, almost, like just the simple thing of saying thank you for your service. And when I think the first time I heard it, I was like, what are you, okay, you're welcome. And I honestly didn't know how to respond. And I had to sort of think about it. And I had to flip it away from me and not thank you for your service, Latarsha. I had to look and say, oh, wow, thank you for your service, Ben. And here's why. And like, for me to like, think about the things that you've done for your country that make me able to, you know, walk around and do the things I do. And so for me, I really had to turn it around and internalize and sort of look at everybody else and the things that I'm thankful for them, from them, the fact that they have volunteered their time and, you know, people are overseas, people are here, they're at a desk, they're in a war zone, but they're all making sacrifices for our freedom. So just, I think just that acknowledgement thank you for your service. And for me, it's always an honor. I just say it's an honor. And that in itself just shows that you're, I don't think it's a cliche. In the beginning, I was like, oh, ha-ha. But I think it's a big deal. And I really appreciate hearing that whenever I do.
Yeah.
I would like to say ditto to that. I also find it very nice when people know that I'm a veteran and they let me know that they appreciate my service. And I do the same thing. I'll ask them, well, are you a veteran? And if they are, I'll tell them, thank you for your service. It's a great thing. It makes you feel good.
Yeah. I'm so glad to know that because I've often wanted to say it and didn't because I thought, how many times do they hear this? And they probably don't think that it's genuine and it probably does sound cliche. And so I'm happy to know that just something that simple, you know, and heartfelt, that it goes a long way, that it does resonate. It lands with you guys. So thank you.
Yeah, matters yeah. Every time.
Thank you. Well, as we close out the show today, is there anything that you would like to say that we did not get a chance to talk about?
There are more than too many veterans that are taking their own lives today. Way too many. More than should be acceptable. Not one should be acceptable. However, there is an uptick. And whenever there is something that happens in our society that's sort of stressful, it seems to propel it a bit further. Just want to just kind of look out, you know, for veterans. There are some challenges that veterans have had being in war zones. They don't have the same experiences. They've seen different things, and it affects them, some people differently, some adversely. And it's really important to sometimes just speak to them and find out what's going on and help them maybe find help or get help.
Yeah. Thank you.
I just like to say, and I think we've sort of mentioned it in different ways, just again, the military is changing. And one of the things that we see is, you know, in some areas we're going full circle. Like you said, Ben, some of the things that you saw when you were in, you're starting to see now. But then at the same time, we're trying to do better. And so I just want to acknowledge that we're all in this together. I know we've heard that a lot over the past few months. We're all in it together. And I don't know, I think it's just an honor to be on the line with you guys.
Same here.
Thank you.
Yeah, here. Same here. I want to thank the two of you for your services. I also want to say that anytime a young person comes to me and they share with me that they're having problems deciding what they want to do the rest of their life, one of the things that I will let them know is that the military is not a bad way to go. The military does a lot for a person, despite some of the things that I've been through. It has served me well. And for those who are those young people who are looking for a way to go, I believe they might want to consider the military and look at what it may have to offer for them.
Nice.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. Well, it has been a wonderful conversation. I wish we could continue. I have about 20 more questions, but unfortunately, time doesn't allow for all of that. But I really appreciate the time that each of you has given us today. Sherry, did you have something you wanted to add? I'm sorry.
As we close, before you say your close, mm-hmm. I just wanted to thank our three veterans here, Latasha, Malik, and Ben. And for those of you in Juneau who know me and know my story of how I got to Alaska, it's my brother Ben who is on the call today. It's his fault. So you got to be
thank you, Ben.
You're welcome.
And then, y'all, he left me here in Alaska, and I'm still here almost 50 years later. But I thank him for that, because I just believe that nothing's by accident. And this was my destiny. Alaska was my destiny, and God just used him and his family to get me here. So thank you for that. And thank you, Malik, my nephew. This is a family thing today, guys. And and to Parsha, my friend, we met several years ago here in Juneau, in the Juneau community. We worked in Juneau together. And it's just been an honor to be with you guys. And we appreciate you. Thank you so much for your service and how you served and had the option to do something else, but chose to protect us as Americans. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yes, and on behalf of myself, thank you for your service. I appreciate you all. So that will conclude our show for today. And to our listeners, we always appreciate you joining us. And you can find resources and things, anything that we talk about on the show. We like to add just a short recap summary and resource links on our Facebook. You can find the Black Awareness Association of Juneau on Facebook by just searching Juneau BAA. Until next week, be well, and thank you again for joining us. Bye-bye.